This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
The imperative for businesses has never been clearer.
The age of experimentation is over.
We're talking transformation and winning at scale. From AI that actually drives ROI.
We are going through that curve of understanding what the technology really can and cannot do.
To turning reams of data into real competitive advantage.
A lot of these successful companies, they treat data as a product.
I'm Chip Planixel, host of Resilient Edge, the smart executive's guide to implementing and sustaining change. Paid and presented by Deloitte. Available now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to The Briefing Room with me, David Aronovich. Into the room full of maps, flip charts and whiteboards come people who know what they're talking about to give us the best insights possible in less than half an hour into the big matters of the moment. And you're invited too. And when you've taken us up on this invitation, you could let us know what you think by writing a review or rating us on iTunes or your podcast provider. And if you'd like, please recommend us to friends, family, workmates and anyone else who you think might enjoy it. If this briefing room helps you understand what's going on in the world, you might like other editions of the podcast. Among the topics we've looked at this year are the Home Office, the Parole Board, Syria, Brexit, council funding, violent crime and plastic. This week, I'm getting briefed on the first year of President Macron of France. How has he done so far? And what does the future hold for him and his country? So take your seat in the briefing room. I'm in the Champs-Élysées between the Élysée Palace and the Arc de Triomphe. And I'm recreating on foot in a rather kind of pathetic fashion, I suppose, a journey undertaken in much grander style almost exactly a year ago by a young man who'd come from being a rank outsider with no political party to becoming President of the Republic, Emmanuel Macron. And a year on, I want to know whether or not Macron and Macronisme is working. Whether this incredibly vigorous young man with such a great list of plans for his country and indeed for the world stands any reasonable chance of success. This is an appalling job I have, but someone's got to do it. So here I am in the Café La Rotonde in Montparnasse, red plush, and I've got with me Adam Plowright, who is an author of a new biography of Emmanuel Macron, and Pierre Briançon, who is a veteran journalist and political commentator for Politico Europe. Pierre, tell us about where we are.
Well, we are first in a place where the old... some of the most famous artists back in the early 20th century, Picasso, Modigliani, used to have coffees here. But it's mostly known now in French politics as the place where Emmanuel Macron celebrated his first round results in the presidential election. He took over the whole place with his campaign staff mostly, a few friendly, fawning pundits and journalists. And he was totally criticized because how could he possibly celebrate a first round, not being sure that he would be elected in second round 2 weeks later. It all seemed a little bit premature. And since being in the Rotonde, of course, there was a lot of criticisms. It seemed a little posh for a lot of people.
Pierre, can I ask you about the French presidency? It's a very, very, in terms of democratic countries, it's quite an unusual position in terms of its power, isn't it?
Well, you have considered as a hybrid between a full-blown presidential system, as in the US, and a traditional European parliamentary system. And so the president is the one who actually has the political authority and political power. He's elected by universal vote, by all the people, and not by, say, parliament. So he's the one who is the depository of political authority. On the other hand, there is a cabinet, a government, headed by a prime minister, appointed by the president, and the parliament can overthrow the cabinet. And so that mix is sometimes hard to understand.
How does that impact upon the way in which the French think about the presidency?
Well, it depends on the idea that the actual president has of how he sees his function. And you can see the stark difference between how Macron considers the job and how Nicolas Sarkozy and François Hollande took them. Nicolas Sarkozy and Hollande ended up not getting much respect from the French voters and French public because they wanted to act like your best buddy, which is not the way the French see their president. And Macron understood that there has to be some majesty, there has to be some prestige, and he explicitly wanted to restore the prestige of the job and to take it back to its former splendor. The model is consciously on our General de Gaulle, who founded the Fifth Republic back in 1958.
Can you just take us through where, since de Gaulle, broadly speaking, the presidents have come from, which parties they've come from, and how embedded in their party structures they've been?
First, de Gaulle created his own party. The conservative camp at the time was divided between two roughly equivalent parties, one closer to the center and the other like more hardcore. De Gaulle was succeeded by his former prime minister, Pompidou, who only ruled for 5 years because he died in office. And then the center-right took over with Valéry Giscard d'Estaing. And then in 1981, the socialists took over. And here again, Mitterrand had created the Socialist Party from scraps of small, marginal center-left or hard-left movements. Mitterrand was succeeded by a Gaullist president, Chirac, who was succeeded by an also conservative successor, was Nicolas Sarkozy. And Sarkozy finally lost to Hollande.
And what you're saying, it sounds to me like the biggest presidents in French history have essentially not been the creations of parties, as they have tended to be in Britain, but have tended to be the creators of parties.
Yes, parties in France have been top-down creations, and Macron is repeating that. We'll see how far it goes. I mean, the test is whether the party can survive its founder. Both de Gaulle and Mitterrand could be clearly associated with what we used to consider the left and the right. It's not as obvious with Macron, who is now seen very strong majority of the French voters as a rightist president, which they were not sure a year ago. I mean, voters weren't sure whether Macron was from the left or from the right. Now they say, I mean, he's got a conservative policy, at least in economic terms. He would deny that, probably, but that's the way that people perceive him.
Adam, let's look at some of these general lessons about France and apply them to Macron personally. I was very struck in your book by Macron's references to the king and to the French Revolution. Can you explain that to us?
He gave a couple of interviews which have now become very well known, where he talks about the role of the king in how the French people think about power. And I think this relates to how he's approached his presidency. He thinks the French people miss the role of the king, of this idea of the figure with ultimate authority and prestige at the centre of French political life. And I think the way he has gone about exerting power is in some ways sought to bring back some of that.
You end your book with a quote from Macron where he says that the French are regicidal monarchists. I mean, could you take us through what he means by that?
I think what he's talking about is they sense this void and they want a figure with authority who can govern the country in a very centralised fashion. But at the same time, they resent that and at every opportunity will try and rebel against that authority.
It's quite funny, really, to anticipate, in a sense, your own decapitation.
I think he's also talking about the experience of his two immediate predecessors in François Hollande and Nicolas Sarkozy. Both of them were elected at the time with great hopes, and very quickly we saw that they had a honeymoon period that quickly turned into a bit of a nightmare, and their pollings fell dramatically.
Very strong in Macron's idea of the president is that authority and prestige comes from being respected because you do what you said. And his main beef with predecessors, and he repeated throughout the campaigns, if you say something, you do it. And he's been remarkably consistent. People can say they were surprised by what he's doing. He's doing exactly what the book said. I mean, his electoral platform.
And let's look a bit at the man. From your book, it becomes clear he is a very, very unusual kind of politician.
He's a very unusual politician, and he's also a very unusual man, both in his personal life and his professional life, which leads to what people often describe as sort of the ambiguity of Emmanuel Macron. You see that in geographically, how he is. He's somebody who's from a small town in France of Amiens, but is also seen as being very Parisian. He's somebody that spans generations, and we've seen that in his marriage with Brigitte, but also the relationship.
How much older than him?
25 years older than him. And we see that in also the relationships that he builds throughout his career, often with people who are several generations older than him. And there's also this tension between the man who is also incredibly cultured. He spends time with a philosopher. He thinks about being an actor, perhaps a writer. And then his professional choices, he becomes a civil servant, and then he becomes an investment banker. And then several years later, we see him emerge as the politician who is neither left nor right. So you see there's this constant juggling of contradictions.
So here's a couple of things that you've picked up on. The first is that he sits at the feet of older people in order to learn what they learn, which is very interesting, very unusual.
One of his really close friends says to me that his conception of how he's built relationships with people who are older than him is that he sees himself as sort of standing on the shoulders of previous generations, and that because he is a man who is in a hurry, he's such an impatient character, I think he felt that he could just learn more from older generations.
What's interesting is that all these people have disappeared. I totally agree that in his formative years, he was what we sometimes call a séducteur de vieux, seducing old people and learning from them. They've disappeared ever since he's been elected president. He's surrounded by people much younger than him. At the beginning, he was very inexperienced in international policy. Foreign policy was not his forte. What to do in Asia, how to deal with the US. He was very, very green. So he does consult a lot of experts. But the older guys have disappeared from the landscape, as if he wanted to show that he's now his own man.
President Macron's new party, now called La République En Marche, seemed to be a hit with people for whom politics as usual was a big turn-off.
Actually, I had no prior political history. I've never been enlisted in any political party in France, and I've never been really interested in politics in France.
That's Delphine O, an En Marche MP based here in the 19th arrondissement in northeast Paris, an area that had long been a socialist stronghold. She found Emmanuel Macron impressive.
Here came this guy, Emmanuel Macron, that I had heard of because he was the Minister of Economy, and he was this brilliant young politician who everybody thought was very smart, but we didn't know what he wanted to do. And so he created what at that time was not a political party, it was a citizens' movement, En Marche, which was 2 years ago. And I became immediately interested because the way that he presented things is that it's not a political party, even though we may be running, in the mid to long term. But what we want to do is bring people who are outside the realm of politics inside politics. And this is how I got interested. I just got on the website and then I found a local committee here in the 19th arrondissement.
Where did it meet?
In cafes. Even now, local committees of La République En Marche don't have offices in Paris. So we met in cafes, usually after work. At some point, I started organizing meetings and such as just attending them.
What were your family and friends saying when you suddenly became from not being politically active to being so politically active?
At first, actually, I don't think I'd mentioned it to a lot of people around me because I thought it was just, well, going to the nearby cafes on a Wednesday night and just debating things with people, so it could be pretty much anything. Even I'm not sure Emmanuel Macron knew that it was going to be such a big thing and that he was going to be elected president.
The presidential system is very different from what we have in Britain. And the figure of the president is a very different figure from what we're used to. Is it the case, really, that there's a very big pressure on a new political party which has been created in support of a president to pretty much do what the president wants them to do?
There is, definitely, but I haven't found yet a single of my colleague who's an MP who dislikes the president or has lost any bit of fascination and admiration that we had a year ago. This is pretty impressive.
You went from being somebody in a cafe having a conversation to being a member of parliament. It's so quickly. Now, there are other Delphine O's was just in the cafes discussing these things. How do they get involved and what do they feel about things?
What I've heard mostly is that the supporters of En Marche are very happy with the pace of the reforms, because for the first time in a very long time, we actually are doing what we say we would do, and we're not bending to the opposition or to resistance, either from political parties, but also from what we call the street, so from strikes and so on.
What are you most frightened of happening? What's the most difficult thing that you have to deal with as an En Marche MP and for En Marche generally in order to maintain the progress?
One thing I think we haven't been very good at in the previous year is communicating about what we're doing. And it's kind of paradoxical, because when you see Emmanuel Macron and his public relations or his image, he's actually very good at it. He's very good at staging himself and then his wife and talking to the young people. He's done that when he was abroad. So on one hand, his image as a person is really good because his communication is very good. But I think we all struggled, and when I say we, it is the presidential team, you know, the prime minister's team, the ministries and the MPs. I think we could very much improve how we communicated the value and the meaning of the reforms that we're implementing. This is something that drew me to Emmanuel Macron's thinking and way of thinking in philosophy, is that it is much deeper than anything I've encountered before in politics. But we tend to forget that, and we tend to not be really able to communicate that to people, also in the language that they can understand, because sometimes we get caught up in our own technocratic language. And this is not what people understand when you go out canvassing or on the markets.
Our Parisian ramble in the sun continues, and we're now in a building that was behind the old Austerlitz station, and it's a huge area for startups. It's a reworking of an old building. It looks a little bit like the Piazza at Covent Garden. And I'm here with two people of the new generation of startups to try and find out what they and people like them think of Macron, of Macronisme, and where they see it all going.
So my name is Alexander Bregman. I'm originally from Holland, so I'm actually not even entitled to vote here in France, but I'm obviously very much into the French politics, considering that I decided to start my company here. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Invitely. It's an app for business travelers to allow business travelers to connect during their business trips.
My name is Charlotte Mueller. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Le Service, which is a web and mobile platform for wellness at work. We are based in Station F. We've been here since it opened. It was last summer in July. The opening of Station F was made by President Macron. He was there and made the introductory speech.
What was your impression of the man then? What was your feeling about him a year ago?
The speech was in itself very interesting, because the entire speech was structured on a comparison between politics and entrepreneurship, and how he was told at the very beginning, when he had his idea of La République en Marche, that it wouldn't work because politics are historically based on left-wing and right-wing, and anything in the center has proved not to work. So he started with that, with the fact that even in entrepreneurship, you have an idea, you start pitching it, and people keep telling you it's never going to work, never. So you don't listen, you work hard, you meet different people, and you confront your idea with the reality. Is there a need for it? So he did that with La République en Marche. Macron has a particular way of picking issues that normally would need you to pick a side and have you join and have you come on board. Let's see if we can just simply work on it. That's
smart. So the politics that, in your point of view, kind of went beyond polarization and so on. Why did that appeal to you?
One of his big focus is unemployment and the fit of our education and our training with the need of the economy. And that, irrespective of whether he's meeting some ideas in the left or in the right, I think what he's working on with employment and flexibility, that's something that needed to be addressed in France.
Okay. Alexander, does it matter to you whether Macron succeeds or fails?
it does matter to me personally. I mean, I live here right now and I definitely want him to succeed. For my company, nevertheless, even if he succeeds or he doesn't succeed, we may still move for other reasons. But I obviously still want them to succeed and do well. And I've been here now for a while. I can compare it to other countries I lived in. And I can tell, right, that the labor laws, they're way too restrictive. I mean, I knew that even when I was working at a big tech company. So I obviously want France to succeed in order to not just support the new economy and the startups, but also help the big multinational companies succeed in France, because so far, you know, they were not as eager to invest in France as into other countries.
Belot is a complicated-looking card game. A short distance from Station F in the 13th arrondissement is Génération 13, a centre where older people meet up and meditate, discuss philosophy and play Belot. I interrupted the players to ask them what they made of President Macron.
Normalement, Macron aurait dû être...
Macron should naturally be a centrist based on his professional training, his ideas, liking the stock market. And he likes money. He should also be part of Hollande's party because of his social ideals. I think he helps the rich a lot more.
L'image qu'il nous a montrée à la télévision était celle de Mitterrand.
The image he showed us on TV was that of François Mitterrand. He wanted us to believe that he was left-wing. Afterwards, we saw the reality. He isn't the president of the rich, but the very rich.
No, I'm not satisfied. He's very good on the international stage and for France's image. But within France, I don't agree. I think people are given too many state benefits.
Eh bien, écoutez, il fallait un changement.
Listen, we needed a change. I think he brings it. He's definitely too rigid. But I trust the direction he's going in. I think he does good things.
Il fait des choses bien. Si c'était demain...
If the election was tomorrow, I wouldn't vote for Macron. In 4 years, if he changes, maybe. But tomorrow, no.
Mais demain, no.
Scientific? Probably not. Suggestive? Yes. And with me now to push the discussion forward from the anecdotal are Sophie Pedder, Paris bureau chief at The Economist and author of a book about Macron's victory, Révolution Française, and Bruno Jambard, deputy managing director of the French polling firm Opinion Way. Sophie Pedder, if I can begin with you. We heard earlier from quite a lot of people that Emmanuel Macron, whatever you think of him, is doing what he said he was going to do. It's a repeated theme. Could you tell our listeners what he has been doing that he said he was going to do?
I think in a way the phrase that sums it up is one he used when he launched his party, and that's trying to unblock France. I think he sees France as this sort of potentially wonderful country that could be doing so much better, but that's got sort of bogged down and somehow held back by a whole series of sort of rigidities, rules, laws, paperwork. And he has, I think, come into power wanting to try and set about reducing those. You know, an example would be the labour market, where he's tried to make it easier for companies to hire people on shorter contracts. It's about professional training. It's about preparing people for a new world of work. It's about, I think, making France feel like a country that's coping with the 21st century and is sort of open to all those things.
Bruno Jambard, concretely, what have been the most popular and most unpopular policies that he's introduced in his first year?
Well, clearly the most unpopular was the fact that he cut taxes on the wealthiest people. Also, the fact that the job market reform was not really popular also in the country, because people here are really attached to this idea of stability and security for workers. But what is interesting in Macron's case since 1 year is that it's not what he's doing which is very popular. It's much more the way he's doing it and the behavior he has as a president.
Right. So why do you say that?
Well, because people were very disappointed with how François Hollande, the former president, ran the country in the past 5 years. And Macron was able, in the first days of his mandate, to show that he was ready to the job. He was able to discuss with foreign leaders. They feel that he's trying to do what he has announced during the campaign.
Over here in Britain, we've been hearing a lot about the railway strikes in protests against Macron's reforms of the railways. Sophie Petter, how's that going? Is he going to win?
It's sort of his test, I think, of whether he's got the resolve to keep his nerve, you know, whether he can hold out and withstand what is, in effect, quite a lot of pressure. And a lot of that depends, I think, on whether public opinion stays on his side. You know, in the past, if you go back to 1995, one of the things that happened during a very paralysing strike after reforms under Chirac and Alain Juppé, his prime minister, was that public opinion started on the side of the government. But over time, it, in fact, swung behind those on strike. As things stand now, what's interesting is that the public opinion has actually been very stable.
Now, in recent months, Bruno, people apparently have come to see him as a right-leaning president who governs for the rich. Do you think this is an accurate perception?
I would say that the first year was really marked by the economic reforms. And when you look at the economic reform that Macron is leading, clearly he's much more clothed from the centre-right than from the centre-left. What is important also to understand is that Macron is doing something that maybe we saw in Britain with Blair before. It's this idea that it's not important if someone is coming from the left or from the right as an idea. Which is important is what is efficient and what can be good for the country.
Sophie, is it your perception that if the initial reforms in the economy tend towards looking like right-wing reforms, that other things that he is likely to do or is promising to do will look more like collectivist and left-wing reforms?
Well, I think it comes down to the perception of what is a left-wing reform in France. If you look at the expectations of a government, I mean, Macron, don't forget, came from a socialist government. He was a minister in a socialist government and an advisor to a socialist president. And your expectation of that sort of someone coming from that kind of background is that the sort of social policies it might put in place would be, you know, increasing benefits or extending rights. But what I think Macron is trying to do is to take a completely different approach. What he considers to be anti-poverty program, and I'd take an example of that in primary schools at 5 and 6 year olds. He has halved class sizes in special education priority areas. So, you know, these would be in the sort of banlieue, on difficult, disadvantaged areas of France. Now that, you know, traditionally in France would be considered an education policy. But I think that Macron's conception is this is about combating poverty, you know, at source. It's going right back to the sort of the origins of disadvantage. So part of, I think, this whole perception with Macron, the whole perception problem, is that he doesn't fit into categories.
Bruno Jeanbart, what, as far as we know, do people not like about his first year of the presidency?
What people don't really like is the fact that he can be seen as contemptuous, a bit arrogant. He's very clever, and so sometimes he gives the impression that he's so clever that he's not listening to the other arguments, and he thinks that he has always the right position. I think that the idea of president of the rich, which is very used in the media, is not so much important in the French public opinion. I mean, they are waiting to see if it's efficient or not. And if it seems as efficient, if the country has an economy which is recovering in the next years, I think they will forgive that and they will forget it.
Sophie Petter, to conclude, across Europe, there's been this experience of disillusioned voters, left behind voters, voters who don't like the European project much, don't like the establishment very much, and people have turned against politicians. And in France, we heard a lot about Marine Le Pen and the Front National. Do you think that Macron has the capacity and is defeating this sort of mentality? Or do you think actually it's still out there waiting to bite him?
Well, I think that the response to that is going to be in 2022, whether he's delivered results or not. And, you know, when I interviewed him earlier this year, that was exactly the question I asked. And his response is, you know, the only answer is to get results. And that will be, you know, jobs and growth and a sense that he's actually doing something for the public interest, the general interest in France. Nearly half the voters in 2017, last year at the presidential election in France, voted for some form of anti-European or extremist or populist candidate. That's huge. And those people haven't gone away. There is a sort of fracture between those who have benefited essentially from globalization and from digital disruption and those who are feeling very threatened by that and are on the losing side of it. And those are the people who voted for those sort of populist candidates. So unless he can actually deliver results, then I think that that threat of populism certainly won't go away.
To sum up then, on a year of Macron, jusqu'ici, tout va bien. So far, so good. My thanks to Sophie Pedder and Bruno Jambard, Pierre Briançon, Adam Plowright, Delphine O, Alexander Bregman, Charlotte Muller, and the Belote players of Génération 13. We'll be back next week. The Briefing Room was presented by me, David Aronovich, and produced by Neil Koenig, Serena Tarling and Emma Bishop. And please let us know what you think about this programme or the entire series, and you can do that by writing a review or rating us on iTunes or your podcast provider. We really, really enjoy hearing from you.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
The imperative for businesses has never been clearer.
The age of experimentation is over.
We're talking transformation and winning at scale. From AI that actually drives ROI.
We are going through that curve of understanding what the technology really can and cannot do.
To turning reams of data into real competitive advantage.
A lot of these successful companies, they treat data as a product.
I'm Chip Kleinexel, host of Resilient Edge, the smart executive's guide to implementing and sustaining change. Paid and presented by Deloitte. Available now wherever you listen to podcasts.